Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And this is episode 6 of our series, Amazon, the Prime Effect, where we're taking a look at how Amazon is changing the ways we shop, live, and work. And today, we're going to talk about how Amazon is redefining work. Let's start with the acknowledgement that the company's very first employee, Jeff Bezos himself, stepped down as CEO this month on July 5th. A couple of days before that momentous transition, Amazon added 2 new items to its corporate gospel, aka Amazon's renowned leadership principles. The principles famously begin with customer obsession. Well, this month, 27 years after Amazon was first incorporated, the company added a leadership principle about its employees. And in typical Amazon fashion, the goal is gargantuan. Strive to be Earth's best employer. Admire the ambition or laugh at the hubris? Well, probably a bit of both. Meanwhile, hubris, ambition, and success were all on display on July 20th. My fellow space nerds will appreciate the date. That's when Bezos boarded Blue Origin's, i.e. his, New Shepard rocket, and launched into space. Upon returning safely to Earth, Bezos handed out the hosannas.
I want to thank every Amazon employee and every Amazon customer, because you guys paid for all of this.
But hey, cut the guy some slack. Bezos was giddy. He'd just fulfilled a boyhood dream. Also, Bezos wasn't wrong. Amazon's millions of customers, and more importantly, its 1.3 million employees, have helped make him the richest man on Earth. A staggering net worth, topping $214 billion. And how'd they do it?
And that rate culture, from what I've seen, from all of the people that I've known that have gotten hurt at Amazon, it's about that pace of work and the workload. At Amazon, if you do not hit your rates, you're gone.
That's Tyler Hamilton. He works at MSP One, an Amazon fulfillment center in Minnesota. He's echoing the same sentiment you find in hundreds of stories about the demands Amazon puts on its fulfillment center workers. Stories that come up on Google searches about Amazon and work with headlines like, "Being homeless is better than working for Amazon." That one's from The Guardian, by the way. But in those same Google searches, you'll also find that LinkedIn named Amazon the number one company where Americans want to work. So will the real Amazon please step forward? Okay, well, of course, by now you know that Amazon is all of the above. Point is, from the minute surveillance of its warehouse workers to the lofty leadership principles inculcated into its managerial ranks, Amazon has outsized influence on the workplace. Success, after all, has many admirers. One day those practices and managers could very well be coming to where you work. So what's it like working at Amazon now? We're going to hear from workers from the warehouse all the way up the corporate ladder to a former Amazon executive. So let's get back to Tyler Hamilton. He's been working at the MSP One Fulfillment Center for 4 years, most recently in the robotics department.
They look like Roombas. They're like giant 300-pound orange Roombas. They don't always work. So we normally call our department like Amnesty or Floor Health, but it's the robotics department. So we make sure that all of those things keep running.
The work is grueling and physical. Tyler knows a lot of people who've had serious injuries on the job. So why has he stayed?
Have you ever heard the phrase golden handcuffs before?
Those are the conditions or benefits that keep a person in a job they'd otherwise leave. Tyler says for coworkers on the warehouse floor, that might be something like health insurance. For him, it's Amazon's flexible time-off policies.
If you need to use time to go into work later, or to leave work early or do whatever, you have the ability to do that, which is really helpful because so many of us, when we work at Amazon, we juggle things. You know, people have school, they have kids, they have, you know, a second job or a third job. The drawback to that is if you run out of time off, you are terminated.
And then the pandemic hit.
I'm opening my phone and seeing on my phone, like, and my email, like, you have tested, like, positive in big letters, like, for SARS, COVID-19, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, my God.
Tyler got COVID late last year. He says he's sure he got it at work.
Well, I had a fever of, like, 103 degrees and, like, the aches and the chills, lost sense of smell and taste. Luckily, I never had the problems with breathing, but I was gone for, like, a month.
Employees like Tyler risked termination for those long absences. Some were fired. MSP1 is a huge facility. 2,500 employees work there, and people were really scared about getting COVID. So dozens walked off the job three times in 2020.
And there were some people who were fired for using their unlimited unpaid time off because they didn't go onto an app that Amazon has to use their unlimited imaginary time off or something, and they were terminated for job abandonment. We just did a strike, and we got them to hire them back and then pretend like nothing ever happened. Like, we were just trying to talk to the media, trying to, like, I mean, in a way, bother the leadership and the management as much as possible, because Amazon has internal paths that where they want you to give feedback. We were talking to our managers and their managers and their managers, like, going up the chain, and continuous conversations like, hey, we should be having temperature screenings. Well, what happens, like, if someone gets sick with COVID? Like, are they going to get fired if they run out of time off? Amazon warehouses have twice the rate of injuries as other warehouses, even before COVID. And then you throw COVID in here where people are getting sick and people are, like, dying from COVID. And we're in this, like, crowded warehouse, you know, 2,500 people there. It was almost like a whirlwind of all of this is happening and, okay, we need to do something. And even though it's going to cost them money, because, like, it's our health and our safety.
Ultimately, Amazon changed course and began giving workers unlimited unpaid time off during the pandemic. Ignacio Alonso also had COVID safety concerns. He spent about 2 months working for an Amazon contracted delivery service in San Jose, California.
The hardest part working as a driver is that we had nowhere to use the restroom, no restroom breaks, nowhere to use it. So when we had to use the restroom, we had to use it on the side of the road or in the van. And if you can imagine, feces and urine covered packages were being delivered to customers because we had nowhere, we couldn't wash our hands anywhere. They gave us sanitizing, hand sanitizer, but most of the time they were out of it.
We asked Amazon to respond to these allegations. A spokesperson told us in a statement, quote, "We work closely with delivery service partners to set realistic expectations that do not place undue pressure on them so that they are able to complete their routes. We know we don't always get it right, and we regularly make changes to improve the program and the driver experience." Recall that Amazon directly employs more than 1.3 million people. Many more must abide by Amazon's regulations through contract work. The company reportedly has 110 fulfillment centers, and in many of those places, employees have loved their experience. Isaac Afarage worked at a distribution facility in Joliet, Illinois.
My experience was awesome. I started off working on the line, just packing boxes. And then not only that, I was able to grow in my role. I was able to get promoted. I think the benefits from Amazon and the work schedule was very amazing. I had awful time. Yes, very hard work, but for the pay and the opportunity that they give, I think it's worth it.
For unhappy workers, Isaac thinks there's something else at play.
I feel as though a lot of people feel as though they should get something for nothing. And Amazon definitely requires you to work hard. But if you work hard, you do what you're supposed to do, then they'll definitely reward you.
We have trained thousands of people in skills that are in demand in local communities in jobs that pay more than we do. And we are helping people get onto a career ladder and advance.
Ardeen Williams is Amazon's Vice President for Workforce Development. You'll be hearing more from her this hour. She leads Amazon's upskilling initiative to retrain 100,000 employees by 2025.
It's about bringing people in and paying them well, providing access to benefits, and providing the opportunity to add skills to experience so that we can, in fact, advance our career, whether that's within Amazon or without.
For Tyler, the warehouse worker in Minnesota, select training programs can only paper over what he sees as broader mistreatment of hourly workers. And he adds this. Tyler says that a company as big and successful as Amazon simply does not need to mistreat workers in order to meet its business goals.
Amazon doesn't succeed just because it's terrible to its workers. Like, Amazon succeeds because it's a completely new business model. It's basically taking retail and industrializing it. And no one else has really done that. And no one has the infrastructure to compete. So you don't need to mistreat your workers to succeed. The biggest changes would probably be the workload. So like part of the solution is like easing up on that like rate culture a bit. Like that pressure where it's like, oh no, I went to the bathroom. So when you get back, you have to work faster to keep up. That kind of thing. Like that's not healthy. As long as I'm freaking here, like, if things are broken, I want to fix them.
Voices of workers in Amazon fulfillment centers. Well, joining us now is Karen Wise. She's a technology correspondent covering Amazon, Microsoft, and the region's tech scene for the New York Times, and she's with us from Seattle. The headline of her recent piece that she co-reported is "The Amazon That Customers Don't See." Karen, welcome back to On Point.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, you know, this hour we're going to essentially work our way up the company chain here from fulfillment center workers and hourly wage earners at Amazon all the way to what the corporate culture says about folks that get to work where you are in Seattle or at Amazon's other headquarters near Washington, D.C. So first of all, in your piece, Karen, you really describe how Jeff Bezos and Amazon, in a sense, invented the workplace of the future. So regarding employee management, what does that look like at the level of hourly wage earners in the fulfillment centers?
Yeah, they've really taken a kind of technology-forward, systems-driven approach to managing people. So you might have one manager for 50, 75, even 100 employees on the floor, and they have all these tools to kind of oversee how people are doing. They have tools to tell them, oh, you should go talk to so-and-so to kind of pick up the pace, things like that. And it's a technique that has allowed them to scale very quickly. But it also has created, you know, you heard some voices earlier about concern about a lack of career path, and it just creates a job pyramid where there's just not that many paths, like structurally, not that many paths to move up because you have technology doing a lot of the oversight and management that you typically would have in a normal retail store, a person doing.
Mm. Well,
the other thing
is so
created.
Sorry, Kara. There's a slight delay on the line here, but we'll work our way through it. the thing that you wrote about in this really deeply reported piece here is that broadly speaking, you found that the way that Amazon manages people, especially hourly workers, as you say, heavily reliant on metrics, apps, chatbots, it was uneven and strained, which is in remarkable comparison, marked contrast, I should say, to the way they, you know, process the very packages that those workers are helping get sent out to customers. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, Amazon is just growing so fast, and particularly its workforce has really accelerated in the past couple of years. And so the investments in the tools to make this really scale well kind of were kind of lagging to the size of the company and the size of the number of people it's employed. And one thing that we found is that it has ultimately a very short-term work model. And part of this goes back to Jeff Bezos himself, that he believes that Jeff wants people who are highly motivated, will go above and beyond. He believes that people essentially are inherently lazy, that they do the minimum work required. And so he really wanted a model that would kind of have people there and their data show that they were less satisfied after a couple years and then find ways for them to leave. And so they actually pay people to leave. They'd have these training programs for people to leave the company. And overall, we found the company has really high turnover, about 150% a year annual turnover, which means its whole workforce turns over roughly every 8 months. And that is much higher than both the warehousing industry traditionally and the retail industry generally. And it's a question now, as they're so big and the labor market's so tight, as to whether or not that will keep working.
Whether or not that will keep working, and I'm also curious about whether these management approaches to hourly workers may spread elsewhere in the United States. I mean, Amazon already employs 1.3 million people directly around the world. It's the United States' second largest private employer, on the path to being the nation's largest private employer in just a couple of years. So we'll talk more about that when we come back from a break. This is episode 6 of our series, The Prime Effect. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today it's episode 6 in our ongoing series about Amazon. We're calling it The Prime Effect. It's all about how Amazon is changing the way we shop, live, and work, and we're focusing on the work part today and Amazon's relationship with its workforce as the world's largest retailer. I'm joined today by Karen Wise, reporter for The New York Times. She's reported extensively on Amazon, and we've got links to her stories at onpointradio.org. She's with us from Seattle. And Karen, before the break, you talked about Amazon having this very high turnover rate, especially amongst hourly workers across the company. So we had a chance to talk to Ardeen Williams, who is Amazon's Vice President of Workforce Development, and we put the findings of your reporting to her and asked her about that, about the great resignation that's happening across the country and how that is being wrought at Amazon.
I suspect that part of the shift in the labor market is that there are people who are deciding that by adding skills to the experience they have, they're opening other doors. And they had a chance during a tremendously dark period for the country to see what the possibilities were in terms of resiliency in other fields. And so I think we've seen a pretty significant shift in the labor market that was accelerated by the pandemic.
Mm. But internally to Amazon, as you definitely know, the New York Times has reported on Amazon's workforce quite extensively. And in one of their stories, they say they found 150% turnover a year, which they reported as being higher than the retail or logistics industry averages. I mean, do you think that turnover rate in Amazon is acceptable?
I don't know if that is the turnover rate. I don't have that data.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess what would you say would be an acceptable rate of turnover at Amazon?
I think turnover is tough, right? When people leave, you lose not only institutional knowledge, you lose colleagues. And so retaining a skilled workforce is a priority. And I think that when you If you take a look at, for example, the two leadership principles that were recently added prior to the change from Jeff Bezos to Andy Jassy, being Earth's best employer and the safest place to work, that really underscores the focus on ensuring that we are creating a great place to work and taking care of our workforce.
That's Ardine Williams, Amazon's Vice President of Workforce Development. Karen, so many things to ask you following even just that short exchange with Ms. Williams there. First of all, how do you respond to her saying that she's not sure if the turnover rate that you reported is right? She said she didn't have that data.
She may not have that data. I mean, we went through an extensive month and a half fact-checking process with Amazon on our reporting. So if that had been inaccurate, they would have let us know, I believe. And that came from multiple sources. And one thing I found so fascinating was here in Seattle, among executives, among people who work and look at the projections for their labor needs, there's this fear, a palpable fear, that Amazon is going to run out of workers because it is growing so fast and it is churning through people so quickly. And there are parts of that short-term model that work for a lot of people. We talked to a lot of workers who were saying, you know, I was laid off at the pandemic from this restaurant and I came here and it got me through until, you know, we were able to start opening dining again, or vice versa. I worked in customer service at a retail store, and oh my God, I'm so glad to not deal with customers yelling in my face anymore. And this second, just come in, do my job and leave. And so it does, there is a degree to which it can, the short-term model can really help people. But we also talked to a lot of people who really did want to stay for longer, and they were so excited to join this kind of preeminent employer and this preeminent company in the economy and thought, oh, this is where I'm going to build my career. And it is just very hard to build a career if you're starting at the hourly ranks. There are just not that many ways to move up the ladder there. Just structurally, there's just not that much. And what we found is a lot of just, when you're one of 100 people your manager oversees, it's hard to have a real deep bond with your manager or with an employer. It was certainly harder during COVID, obviously, with masks and distancing and all of that. It's harder to throw the parties and things that you might do. But it's hard to form a deep bond. And so when trouble happens or something comes up, it's just harder to get things solved and fixed. And so part of, you're talking about a workforce who has a very complicated life. You have public transportation, cars that break down, childcare, juggling with family, all this stuff, very complicated things. And so while Amazon does have some flexibility in letting people take some time off and manage it on their own, there's still other things that come up. And there are some places where managers talked about being so proud of being extra flexible for their staff and breaking the rules to allow someone to stay. And other places where people were, we had an example in the story of a woman who had one bad day, just literally one day where everything was going wrong. She said, it was not her fault. The machines were broken. She kept getting assigned different stations and she was fired for too much time off task, which is too much time not actively working, which is something Amazon monitors. I should say Amazon changed their policy as we were closing our story. So no longer can you be fired for a single bad day.
Okay. But when you said that she was getting, her tasks were being changed, was that to an automated system or was there a human manager changing her tasks?
There is, it's a little bit of a hybrid. There is ways that people's work is assigned and the staffing levels are automated, but there is a person saying, hey, you go to this part of the building or you go to that part of the building, or we need you in the robotics area today or whatever it may be. Some people come and they have the same job every day in and out. And some people have jobs where they kind of are trained on multiple parts of the business, but there is a huge effort to manage schedules, manage demands over time. If they have flexible time to take time off, all of that, because they are very, very demand driven. Don't forget, we click and we get something 2 days later on our door. And so that means they almost need labor in a just-in-time model, but they're managing it with, they don't really use temps and they don't use contract labor that much in the warehouses. So it's this kind of hybrid of managing full-time or part-time workers, but to meet the labor demands that are really set by customers and how much we order.
Yeah. And so Amazon said to us that part of their turnover rate is driven by the loss of those essentially what they call seasonal workers, those part-time workers who may come in for several months at a time, just to want to make a note of that. But what you just said, Karen, was so fascinating because this is a company, probably the company that's most world famous for being customer obsessed, right? Which is what leads them to make these highly sophisticated, tightly controlled processes to get packages from my computer when I click to my door in a day, essentially. And yet, when it comes to managing employees, especially these hourly workers for Amazon, ostensibly, the company could see them as the customers. The employees are the customers of HR services that Amazon should be providing. But in your reporting, it seems as if they don't have, like deliberately don't have that same highly focused sense of serving those employee customers. Because, for example, you start your story with this tragic story, case of an Amazon worker who got COVID, suffered extreme brain damage, and yet his wife was receiving emails from the HR system saying he was expected to return to work, and she couldn't even get anyone on the phone to say, my husband cannot work. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's a case. So there are so many automated mechanisms that track, you know, if you're not, they were, this man out on long-term, short-term and then long-term disability. But their systems that in the, would still send him these automated return to work notices, they're called. Some of them came at a time when his wife had spent months and months and months, you know, talking with Amazon, trying to talk to Amazon, being able to reach people, not being able to reach people. You know, she had a period where for many, many weeks, I believe it was about 2 months, she wasn't getting the short-term disability payments that she was supposed to. And to her, it was just an example. There wasn't really it didn't feel like there was a human on the other side, really kind of, no, this is a man who spent five years at Amazon. And it just felt like no one was anyone even keeping track? And so one thing we heard is Amazon does talk, HR office and departments do talk about employees as customers. They use a lot of very similar language. They want a friction-free experience, a frustration-free experience. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, frustration-free packaging is actually something Amazon has trademarked about trying to make it easy to open boxes. And so they do use that language, but something we found was that folks who work on it at a corporate level, who've been in other parts of the businesses and have seen Amazon invest enormous resources and enormous urgency into customer-facing issues, they have not brought that same energy or investment to the human side of things. And I think Ardeen referenced these new leadership principles that Jeff Bezos mm-hmm. and the leadership put out. I think you're seeing a bit of a awakening about maybe how behind they were and how that's causing problems now. Both you have, you know, external pressures, you have, you know, a unionization effort in Alabama, you have negative stories, frankly, and you have this labor market that is just really, really challenging as they want to grow. So you are seeing now more kind of public signaling that there will be more intentionality and more investment in this. I think what that means, we'll have to see. It's really a pretty new change to have this be front and center in this way.
And those two new leadership principles, by the way, are strive to be Earth's best employer and success and scale bring broad responsibility, which Amazon added to its leadership principles just a couple of days before Jeff Bezos stepped down as CEO earlier this month and Andy Jassy took over. And notably, Bezos had put his thoughts about Amazon's current workforce following the Bessemer, Alabama union drive in his final letter to shareholders, too. So clearly, it's, as you say, Karen, it's on the minds of Amazon executives. But if you just hang on here for a second, Karen, because I want to turn to someone now who was a former Amazon executive and also has experience in the warehouses for the company. Joining us is Dave Glick. He's a former Amazon VP who worked there for 19 years. He's now chief technology officer at Flex, which provides on-demand warehousing and fulfillment services and logistics as well. Dave, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, tell me, when you started at Amazon, let me just put it this way. Do you have experience actually working in Amazon's fulfillment centers?
Yeah, actually, I wasn't paid to work in the fulfillment centers, but I think the third week I was employed, I got an email from the CFO, as did we all, that said, "What are you doing right now? And if it's not more important than delighting our customers, stop what you're doing and drive to the warehouse." And I was watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And so I watched the last 6 minutes of it, and I drove to the warehouse, and I spent the next 3 weeks working midnight to 8 a.m. Sorting packages as they came down the line. Very interesting experience.
Interesting why?
Because you got to see a completely different part of the company. And, you know, this was 20 years ago, 21 years ago. And it actually set me up to work to build new warehouses, to run the fulfillment center systems, and to have empathy for what the folks in the warehouse were doing, because working for 8 hours on your feet is a hard job.
So how has Amazon changed for its hourly workforce in the years since you had that experience? Because I'll just quote a line from Karen's story, because she writes that Amazon and its founder Jeff Bezos had pioneered new ways of mass managing people through technology, relying on a maze of systems that minimized human contact to grow unconstrained. Now, that growth has definitely happened. Has Amazon kept up in its sophistication in managing the people it relies on for that growth?
I mean, Amazon is continuously scaling to meet the next Christmas peak or the next holiday peak. You know, we woke up on January 2nd and started planning for the next holiday peak. And to do that without systems and without robots would have been undoable.
And so then what would you say is where Amazon's corporate or culture is headed when it comes to managing these hourly workers?
You know, I would call it computer assistant management. And so you do have people, managers in the warehouse, and many of them are, many of them in this could be their first job. And then as they work up in the ranks, they've got more experience. And so you have those folks who are managing the people, but they are assisted by software that Amazon's built.
Mm, okay. Well, so let's focus a little bit more on your personal experience there as an Amazon employee yourself, all the way to becoming an executive over some 19 years. How did you see Amazon change besides all that spectacular growth and remain the same over that time or remain the same over that time?
Yeah, I think there was actually, between 1998 and today, a lot more similarities than differences. We have the leadership principle now, though they have the leadership principles, and that was kind of a roadmap on what we expect from people. Managers came and VPs came, but the leadership principles stayed, and the processes around developing people around those leadership principles have stayed the same. One example was there was a VP who left, I think, in 2004 and came back in 2007, and I said, "Man, it must be completely different. You've been gone for so long." And he said, "No, it's all kind of the same. You know, we are making the impossible possible. We are scaling the company. We are building systems, and the culture and the pace and the things that we did to scale the company didn't change very much."
Didn't change very much. Okay, Karen, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, no. I think Dave is right. I remember when I first started reporting on Amazon, I kept hearing about these leadership principles, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. You hear all this corporate speak. And I don't think I fully, it took a little bit to realize, no, this is like a real deal. People talk about these, like the, 10 commandments, but they're day in, day out as part of your life there. And it has been that for so long. It's how you're evaluated. It's how you are hired. And it really does create clarity on what is valued and how to operate. And, there's no doubt that that is part of Amazon's special sauce.
And but it's a part of how you're evaluated and how you're hired if you're working in Amazon's corporate, in a corporate job.
Correct.
Yeah. Right.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So, there's not interviews if you're hourly. It's done. It's done.
That's via, right.
Computer.
Right. So it's like two very different worlds at Amazon as an employee at Amazon. Depending on where you are and who you are. So when we come back, we're going to talk more about that corporate culture and the corporate employees and how they're having an impact on the rest of the American workforce as well. We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's episode 6 of our series on Amazon, The Prime Effect. And today we're talking about Amazon and its relationship with its workforce, more than 1.3 million people worldwide. I'm joined today by Dave Glick. He's a former Amazon VP and currently with the logistics company Flex, and Karen Wise is with us as well. She's reported extensively on the company's labor practices and work culture as technology correspondent for The New York Times, and she's with us from Seattle. Now, we have been talking about the management practices and challenges that Amazon has regarding its vast hourly workforce. Let's focus a little bit more about the people they hire into the corporate ranks. And now, Karen, we spoke with someone that you reported on last spring, Maren Costa, who worked for the company for 15 years, and she told us her story as well. So let's go back to when she started at Amazon in 2002.
Jeff Bezos was just walking the floor, and you could bump into him in any hallway, and, you know, you could hear his laugh from five rooms down, and, you know, it was so exciting to be at Amazon in those early years. You know, it was just like everything was new. You know, we just, nobody knew if it was going to work or not. You know, the big challenges are still yet to be solved. You know, you're not tweaking dials. You're digging trenches. You know, it's the big work. And then as it grew, it definitely became just more and more intense. I remember when I got pregnant with my first child, nobody had pictures of their kids on their desks. It was like, you did not do that. And I think I was the first person in my entire organization to have a child, you know? Everybody was so young. I was seeing a therapist at the time, and she was like, are you in some sort of social experiment? Because it was just so crazy.
People were getting fired. Those left behind weren't kind. The work became even more relentless. It just wasn't compatible with having two young children. So in 2011, Maren left Amazon. But she missed the things that she loved about the company. So following a divorce in 2014, she found herself looking for a job to support her family. And Maren went back to Amazon.
I went back. I was working on the same stuff, the website at first, but then I had the opportunity to work on like Fire TV and so designing for TV. And this is what I loved about Amazon, was that just the ability to keep learning and keep being challenged, and you didn't even have to brush off your resume. It was like, you're going to work here. Now you're going to go work here. Now you're going to learn this. Now you're going to do that. And it was like, that was so exciting.
Marin kept rising from one new position to the next.
And then I went to a secret project working in even more cutting edge stuff. But it was round about that time that I started to get really concerned about climate.
Marin couldn't believe it either. So around 2018, she started pitching ideas to her managers, ways that the company could be more climate friendly in its business operations. But those ideas got no traction.
As a mom, I just thought, I can't not put everything into this. Otherwise, I won't be able to look my kids in the eyes in 20 years and say, like, I did everything I could. I tried. It was really like, no holds barred. You know, I'm ready to take a lot of risks and put a lot on the line because, you know, it's your kids.
Hire and develop the best. That is one of Amazon's core leadership principles. So it's significant that Amazon hired Marin Costa not just once, but twice. However, with her growing concerns about climate change, Marin found it increasingly difficult to adhere to another one of the company's leadership principles: have backbone, disagree, and commit. Backbone, yes, Marin had plenty of that. Disagree, yes, that too. But she could no longer commit to what the company was doing.
It was so clear to me that my values were diverging so steeply from Amazon's. In fact, I remember in 2018, I went out for a happy hour with some friends. And one of these friends was just hammering me on, how can you work for Amazon? Just hammering. And I was like, I know. I just like actually started crying. It was like, you know, it was just sort of this moment of like, I can no longer make this okay. I need to just do whatever I can do to have the impact that I want to have, even to save the company that I love, as well as save the planet.
Marin got more vocal. She took on a public role with Amazon Employees for Climate Justice, and she was talking to the press a lot. Amazon wasn't happy about it. Company policy prohibits employees from commenting publicly on its business without executive approval.
I got the notification at like 6 in the morning. Make sure you're in a private location. You absolutely have to be on the, it was a 6 in the morning for a 9 o'clock meeting that day, you know? And I was like, okay, I can guess what this is going to be. And so I got on the video call and, you know, he said, you know, are you aware that you broke the, you know, external communications policy and on this date and in this article and, you know, do you know what it is? And here, I'll send you the policy so that now we know that you know that we know that you know what the policy is. You know? And so you're not going to get away with this again, you know. And the message was clear. And, you know, at that point, it was a little bit like, ooh, okay, wow, okay, so I could lose my job, which could potentially, like, ruin my career. As, you know, I have 25 years as a user experience designer, but getting fired from Amazon could be the black mark that, like, kicks me out of the industry. Then I tried to stay out of the spotlight a bit, but then, of course, COVID happened.
Marin felt compelled to speak out for Amazon warehouse workers who were complaining of unsafe conditions as the pandemic worsened. In April 2020, she forwarded an email about treatment of warehouse workers, and in that email there was a link to a petition at the bottom, which technically was solicitation. Then, on April 15th, 2020, Marin helped set up a meeting between warehouse workers and tech workers.
So our group sent out this invite. And at about 1 p.m. and at 3 p.m., I was fired. We were fired so fast, you didn't have time to blink. You know, like the HR person says, are you recording this call? I said, no. And she said, okay, you were warned in October for breaking the external communications policy. You have continued to break policies, including the no solicitation policy. This will end your employment with Amazon effective immediately. We'll send you a box for your stuff. And I'm ending this call. The only thing I said was, are you recording this? No. And then my son said, Mom, did you just get fired? I said, yeah, I did. And he said, is it because of the climate stuff? And I said, yeah, it is. And he said, do you have any regrets? And I said, no, I don't, because I'm doing this for you.
Public disparagement of a business and using company email for solicitation are commonly prohibited in many companies. Marin admits that. She says even some of her own friends weren't sympathetic when she got fired. So Marin's career at Amazon came to an end, but she has bounced back.
I am working at Microsoft now, and when I was interviewing with them, you know, the first thing I said was, hey, have you Googled me? Do you know where why I left Amazon? And he was like, I don't know if this is true or not, but he said, no, I don't. And I was like, well, let me just tell you the story. Here's the nutshell. You know, I was fired. You can go Google me. You don't have to give me an answer. No hard feelings. Take it back to the team. I totally get it, you know? And he was like, well, no, I don't think so. I think that the team would really benefit from, you know, the passion that you have for, you know, issues outside of work. And I think you could really bring that to the team and it would be really beneficial.
That's Marin Costa, a 15-year Amazon veteran fired last year for breaking internal policies, as you heard. And I just realized that I had been pronouncing her name incorrectly for the past several minutes. So Marin, if you are listening now and you can hear me, please accept my deepest apologies. That is, once again, Marin Costa. Now, Karen Wise, what lessons do you draw from Marin's experience, what happened to her at Amazon, a company that she, you know, told you and told us that she actually loves?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. People leave or exit in various ways. Some have a great experience and try to take what they learned there and go somewhere else. And some have regrets for things that they were involved with and the time that they were there. There's clearly an amazing, like, propulsive energy to working there when you talk with people. Like Marin said, you're working on big questions, you're moving fast, you're doing, you know, it's a speed and a rigor that people seem to really love. But sometimes I have talked with people who've left who also kind of, when they step out of it or have a kind of a break, they're like, wait a minute, this isn't quite right for me. Or parts of this were right for me, but other parts weren't. You know, until a month ago, the word empathy wasn't anywhere in the leadership principles. And I know a lot of people really wanted that word to be there more as for employees, for people. So it is interesting, not interesting, but I would say like... There is evolution at Amazon. You know, they add leadership principles. They is a place that can have self-reflection. Amazon is doing more on climate change now than they were when Marin first began protesting. So it is a place that can also self-correct. And that is something that keeps some people there. They say, I don't love this thing, but, you know, maybe I can fix it internally. There's quite a range of experiences that people have. And you know, I know Dave talks to a lot of people who are considering leaving and debating the pros and cons about kind of how can I take what I love and get it elsewhere, or can I not? And is it worth staying here? That sort of thing.
Yeah. Dave, you want to comment on that?
Yeah. I mean, as Amazon has grown, the work you do changes as you move up the ranks and you go from being a builder to someone doing reviews and writing papers. And people are struggling with that, I think, because it's been such a place to build for so many years. And so for some, the right thing is to, you know, embrace it and continue to learn. And some is to take what you've learned over the last 20 years and go start your own company or go what I call the Amazon diaspora, and go work in another company.
So can you tell us more about that? Because I think that's one of the most fascinating ways in which this corporate culture and the approach that Amazon has as an employer to its employees may actually have a broader impact on the labor market. So how big is this Amazon diaspora? How much of Amazon's practices and approach are they taking along with them?
I mean, I would, you know, say if you go look at the ranks of startups and the C-suite at startups, at big companies as well, you know, the VP of e-commerce at many CPG companies came from Amazon. The CTO at many startups came from Amazon, and so on and so on. And I think that no one will tell you they're not taking anything that they learned from Amazon. And, you know, some of them we say we should take this, but not that. But the ideas of being efficient, executing, being rigorous, diving deep, having a bias for action, those are universally applicable and in demand at all companies around.
Karen, what do you think about that? Because this is the question that sort of undergirds our entire series here, is how is Amazon changing these core sections of our approach to shopping, how we live, how we work broadly? I mean, do you think that Amazon's employment practices are spreading across American businesses?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, particularly in the industries that are kind of it competes with. So if you're thinking largely in the logistics and the retail industries, you know, people need to keep up with Amazon's growth. And sometimes they do it through kind of totally new innovations or new things that Amazon isn't doing. But there is something about but they're still chasing Amazon in many ways and trying to innovate as fast as Amazon has. And a lot of the reason Amazon has been able to do that is because of the way it hires and manages people. So it's definitely seen as kind of the leader. It's certainly the leader if you talk about kind of how do you manage or bring technology into managing hourly workforces. I mean, they are more advanced than most other companies in doing that, and companies look to Amazon to understand how to do it. So I think it's one of the preeminent employers in our country, and it's growing fast. It's literally not only employing more people, but it is it has kind of a halo around it of other companies wanting to kind of look to it. There are companies that I would say on the hourly front that have a different approach. You know, the Costco CEO has talked very proudly about really valuing tenure. They have a higher pay. They have much lower turnover. And it's a much more service oriented approach to hourly workers. So either folks are kind of directly chasing or kind of directly pushing back at and going for very different business models, essentially, to try to find a market there.
I was just going to say, if I could, just to honor your great reporting, another really interesting example you point out is that because Amazon, a la Jeff Bezos's initial view that he didn't actually want a large entrenched workforce amongst hourly workers, doesn't have as many internal advancement opportunities for hourly workers, whereas you found that 75% of store managers at Walmart were once, they came up through the ranks. So a really different model there as well. We just got a couple seconds left here, Karen.
Exactly. But everyone is feeling the pressure to keep up with Amazon.
Well, you know, I have to say these hours tend to rip roar by, so I'm afraid we're out of time. Karen Wise, technology correspondent covering Amazon, Microsoft, and Seattle's tech scene for the New York Times. The headline of our recent piece is "The Amazon That Customers Don't See." Thank you so much, Karen.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Dave Glick, former Amazon VP who worked there for almost 20 years, now CTO at Flex. Dave, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, our series, The Prime Effect, continues in the coming weeks when we're going to talk about Amazon and how it uses its data for surveillance of you. So do you have a Ring doorbell or an Amazon device like Echo or Dot? Do you worry how your data is being used or sold or who's getting it? Call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can profit motive save the planet? Is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.